God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thank you, Brother Hutchings. This is the last day in our three-day series with Dr. Grant Jeffrey. Brother Grant's own ministry is headquartered in Canada. He has earned master's and doctorate degrees from Louisiana Baptist University. He's an internationally known prophecy expert and has a popular television program. Here now are Brother Hutchings and Dr. Grant Jeffrey.
Thank you, Brother Jerry. Brother Grant, yesterday you started telling us about the Antichrist as time ran out. Could you tell us what will the Antichrist's arrival mean for the world? Is it going to be any change from what we're doing now, or what is going to happen? I have faith that you and I are not going to be here.
Well, I agree. I believe that by the time the Antichrist is manifested as the world global leader, I believe the rapture will have occurred. I think the Antichrist, because this is the generation we are living in, I believe the Antichrist is alive somewhere, probably in Europe or the Mediterranean, probably even in government or, you know, working behind the scenes. But he is not yet the Antichrist. He is born with satanic power, but he only gets his authority and his crown from Satan. And that can only happen when he is revealed, when the Holy Spirit, who is the restrainer of the mystery of iniquity, is taken out of the way. And that happens at the rapture. So I think we could well see someone beginning to move toward a power position in Europe, and even see Europe clearly move into a 10-nation supergroup. Already in Europe, in the European Union, they have 25 members, and they're finding it incredibly unwieldy. I mean, it's hard to get 10 people to agree to anything, let alone 25 nations. And 25 nations that include major economic powers like Germany and France and Britain, and little tiny powers like Estonia and Latvia. And so in this situation, already the Europeans are talking about reforming Europe into an inner core of 5 or 10 nations, super states, like Germany and Italy and France and England. And then around this core of 5 or 10 nations, then they would have another 15 or 25 smaller states who would not have the power to set policy or economic policy or military policy. That would be set by the Big Ten. But they're already, in a quest for efficiency, beginning to move that way. Some of the things that tell me that we are very much living in the time of the Antichrist is we're told the Antichrist is going to be a tremendous economic leader, that by his policy he causes the craft or economy to prosper, says Daniel. We're told that he's going to be a great flatterer, and he's going to come in with flattery and popularity. You know, at times in history, having not lived through the Nazi era, it was hard to understand how a nation could be taken over so quickly by, you know, a popularity of someone who's virtually unknown. But what's happening in our world with political leaders rising very quickly from nowhere and being accepted tells us that the kind of time we live in, the celebrity culture, you know, the Paris Hilton world where people are read about and watched constantly for no particular reason of accomplishment, tells me that the world is getting into that stage where it will accept a super messiah candidate. And so while I believe that we will be in heaven after the rapture, before he assumes power, we might well see a person moving toward the situation in Europe where we might speculate privately and say, I'm wondering if this might be the guy. But by the time he really declares himself, I believe all true Christians will be in heaven. The technology that now is allowing ID chips to be placed under the skin and radio frequency ID chips by the billions are now, Noah, being placed in every conceivable product in America and around the world. And these chips, sometimes the size of 2 inches of paper square, but many are literally so small that they're smaller than the period at the end of a sentence that you would type. And these radio frequency chips have a computer chip, a unique identification number applied to that particular product, and that product can then be associated with a person if it's read by a reader up to 25 feet away. And next time that you wear that pair of shoes or you wear that clothing with that label or you are carrying a new U.S. passport that has the radio frequency ID chip, then someone with a reader, and you can acquire them on the eBay or anywhere else for a couple hundred dollars, will be able to actually track a person and know who they are by reading those numbers. This kind of world in which every single product will have a unique number and eventually every individual will have a number. Europe's already demanding that all animals in Europe have an ID number. And like the chips that we've been using for ID for lost animals in America, similar chips are being used for animals, including farm and livestock animals in Europe. Well, you see this technology that never before existed, Noah, is now in place, and you can begin to understand how quickly it would be possible to implement the Antichrist totalitarian control system.
We read in the words of Jesus and other prophecies that mentions every nation, every race, every tongue, every language. This is a worldwide prophecy, and it says when you hear these things for the first time in the world, every nation can hear it. It says when you see these things, now then every person in the world can see it on television. So all these things being invented, radio, television, computer chips, I think all this had to come before this prophecy could be fulfilled. And now that they are here, we know that this man is almost here.
Indeed, probably alive and well and living somewhere in our world today. Certainly events and technologies are developing quickly that are setting the stage for the fulfillment of some of the most mysterious of the prophecies of Daniel and Revelation concerning this time and this person. We're living in a total surveillance world now, and the tragic occurrence of 9/11 and similar around the world have caused governments, and without exception, to embark on security policies and surveillance policies of every phone call, every email, all of our internet surfing, and to do so in such a way to provide protection against the threat of radical Islamic terrorism. But at the same token, we are losing forever our freedom and privacy that we have normally assumed were ours to enjoy. France has just introduced a new surveillance program called EDVIGE. And this program, introduced by the President Sarkozy of France this summer, every French citizen above the age of 13, every single one, they are now gathering every bit of information they can in massive databases of their education, their school records, every essay they've ever written, any letter to the editor, all friends they've had and neighbors, medical records, every real estate and every type of record, and then they're using artificial intelligence to link together people to find out who knows who in unofficial links and friends. And it's truly a Big Brother surveillance system, and my research has shown that many other countries are doing it with stealth. They've not announced it, but they're doing the very same thing to track people literally from the cradle to the grave.
And I've heard here in the United States that the FBI and other police sources have to keep track on thousands and thousands of people who they suspect might be terrorists who could harm the country. It's amazing. In England, practically every street is now covered with cameras.
I just came back from England with my wife, Kay, and we were astonished. One reporter said to us that the average person in the UK, visitor or tourist or citizen, will be observed and recorded by camera 500 times every single day. Every mile we drove along the highways, not just major highways, but even in villages, tiny villages, had these TV cameras monitoring and taking pictures of the passengers, driver, and your license every couple of miles. Everywhere you went, from the elevators to the parking lots to every building, here are all of these cameras watching you back streets. But interestingly, the police said that it isn't really stopping crime, it's just displacing it. Criminals decide to go a few blocks over where there's not as many cameras, but it's not actually dropping the crime rate. But people are gradually, tragically, becoming used to it. And there isn't a lot of protest. When I talk to people about it, they mostly just shrugged. But England has more closed-circuit cameras per capita than any other nation in the world.
I noticed a news item in Israel, they've even DNA'd the dogs. So, and in recent Olympics, I think there were 30,000 cameras covering the Olympics.
Yeah, truly amazing. When the Tiananmen Square massacre took place in 1989, one of the reasons the Chinese were able to capture over 10,000 of the Chinese students and ultimately imprison them and torture them and many times kill them was because they had gone to European countries in Sweden, like Ericsson, etc., and had acquired a traffic control system using thousands of cameras and strobe lights that could take thousands of shots with these cameras, even at night with strobe lights, for a high traffic situation. But they didn't have a lot of traffic in 89 in Beijing, only government vehicles, basically. They set them up in Tiananmen Square so that in a riot, every single participant would have multiple television shots from multiple angles, and they then used that and the police and the internet to basically track almost every one of them down.
I know what you mean, Grant. I've been picked up a couple of times in China myself and taken to jail to be interviewed.
Brother Hutchings, I know that you and Brother Grant have more to talk about, but this might be a good place for me to let everyone know how to get his book. It's offered for a gift of $20 in the U.S., $22 for Canadian listeners. To get Countdown to the Apocalypse, call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Or visit the web at swrc.com. Here again is Brother Hutchings.
Continuing on, Daniel kept asking the Lord, when are you going to fulfill all your promises to Israel? When are the covenants that you made with Israel are going to be fulfilled? When is Israel going to be a blessing to all the world as promised? And finally, in Daniel 9, God tells Daniel that's going to happen at the end of 490 years from the time that certain thing would happen. And our 70 prophetic weeks are 490 years. But at the end of 483 years, the time stopped. As indicated, a gap occurred, and I believe it's Isaiah 28 and another chapter. Tell us about this 490 years of 70 weeks.
Well, God was answering Daniel's prayer for information. And God specifically tells Daniel in Daniel 9:24 that this vision I'm going to give you concerns your people and your city. And so the focus is on his people, the Jews, and his holy city, Jerusalem. And God said there would be a period of 77s of years, or 490 years. The Jews used the sevens of years as commonly as we use decades. They thought in terms of sevens, and so they divided time into 7 years at a time. And so God said there's going to be 77s of years, which we call 490 years. And at the end of that, the Messiah will come, and he'll bring in everlasting righteousness and the whole kingdom of God. But he then revealed to them, and in the book I go into great detail, but on the radio I'm just going to say that he indicated that after 483 years from the beginning of this vision, the Messiah, the long-awaited Messiah that is prophesied throughout the Old Testament would be cut off, but not for himself. Now, we know when the beginning point was because we're told that from the command to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Now, there was only one command that meets this category and this requirement, and that is the commandment given by the Persian king Artaxerxes, appears to be the son of Esther. And this man, responding as king to the cupbearer Nehemiah, gives a command to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. We know that this was in his 20th year. He came to the throne in 465 B.C., therefore this was 445 B.C., and we know it was on March 14th based on the calendar and the first day of the month Nisan, the Jewish month. And we're told by Nehemiah that that is the date. So March 14th, 445 B.C. is the beginning. What God told Daniel was that 483 years after that point, the Messiah would be cut off. Now, the Jews at that time used a year of 360 days, 12 months, 30 days each. So when we want to be accurate in prophecy, we have to use the Jewish biblical year. And in the book, I prove that this is the correct year, that this is what all the ancient Jews and the surrounding peoples did. They didn't use a year of 365 and a quarter like we do. So when someone says, I'll see you a year from now, 360 days from now, that's when they're going to be there. And so if you take the 483 years times 360 days, you end up with a period, 907,200 days. And what we end up with is a period of 483 years. As we look at biblical time, that period ended precisely in April, Palm Sunday, AD 32, to the very day. Now, can we be sure that the prophecy was about that? Because we know that while Jesus entered Jerusalem, we often erroneously call it the triumphant Sunday. It wasn't triumphant. While his Jewish disciples acknowledged him as the King of David, the Jewish leadership, political and religious, both rejected him and said, tell your disciples to shut up. And when Jesus looked at them, he said, if my disciples shut up, the very rocks would cry out. In other words, this wasn't any ordinary day. This was a special day. In fact, as Jesus approached Jerusalem, he began to weep as he approached the Eastern Gate. And he began to say, as is recorded in Luke, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, if only thou hadst known in this thy day the things that belong unto thy peace, but are now are hid from thine eyes because thou knewest not the time of thy visitation. This was Israel's time of visitation. This was the completion of the 69 weeks of Daniel to the very day. And we know the Jewish leadership rejected him. 5 days later, he was crucified. This is astonishing. The precision is beyond anything ever seen before in prophecy. And what I have discovered, which is just really blew my mind when I discovered this, is this was actually known fairly well at that time that Jesus was alive. How do we know this? Well, if we go back 50 years before the birth of Jesus, there was a famous rabbi living in Jerusalem called Rabbi Nehemiah. Not Nehemiah, but Nehemiah with a U. This Rabbi Nehemiah was a great biblical scholar, and he was calculating from Daniel's prophecy, and he very easily calculated that the 483 years would end in what you and I call AD 32 in the spring. And knowing that, he then said, okay, well, he can't be born at that point because he's going to be cut off. And he can't proclaim himself to be Messiah until he's a man. Now, the book of Numbers says that you can't be a rabbi or a teacher until you're 30 years of age. So he figured, well, the Messiah has to be 30 years of age at least to begin his ministry. And he allowed a couple of years for ministry. And calculating back from what we would call AD 32, he figured around what you and I would call 0 BC. The Messiah should be born. And he wrote this 50 years before 0 BC. When you look at the wise men as they approach King Herod, and his advisors, and they say, where is he that is born King of the Jews? They don't ask what he's talking about. They know what he's talking about. They immediately respond to the wise men and say, Bethlehem, because they knew Micah 5, 2 had prophesied that. And when Jesus appears as a Messiah figure, the disciples are looking for a Messiah. When the people approach John the Baptist and they ask the question, are you Elijah or are you that prophet? They're not repeating themselves. The first question is, are you Elijah the prophet? And John says, no. The second question, are you that prophet, is a synonym, if you will, for Messiah. Because Daniel 18:18 had said that God would send them a prophet like unto Moses, and he would have the words of life. And so the phrase, that prophet like unto Moses, or just short, that prophet, became a synonym for the Messiah. And so they were asked John the Baptist, are you Elijah or are you the Messiah? Why would they expect the Messiah at that time? Because everyone who was religiously a student of Daniel knew this was about the time for the cutting off of the Messiah.
I would certainly encourage everyone to get a copy of Grant's new book, Countdown for the Apocalypse. There are so many prophetic truths in this book, as Brother Grant explained, that he didn't have time to get into much detail. But you need to get his book, Countdown to the Apocalypse. Outstanding book, some 330 pages. Brother Jerry is going to come now and tell you how you can get a copy. You might also want to get a copy of the broadcast this week. He will also tell you how to do that.
The telephone number to call is 1-800-652-1144. If you prefer the mail, send your contribution and request for the book to Southwest Radio Ministries, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Or visit our website at swrc.com. Countdown to the Apocalypse is a 228-page book offered for a gift of $20 to our U.S. listeners, $22 for Canadians. The three programs in this series are also available on CD or tape for an offering of $17 in the United States, $18 in Canada. Don't miss getting this powerful and insightful book. We'll send Countdown to the Apocalypse in appreciation of your $20 gift to this ministry. That's for U.S. listeners. Canadians should send a $22 offering. The number to call is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Or go to the web at swrc.com. No matter how you contact us, please give us the call letters or dial position of this station. We're taking a hard look at some stations where response is light. You're telling us the call letters might mean the difference in whether we stay on or cancel your station. You know that this program is on your station only through the tax-deductible gifts you make. Not only do we serve as a watchman on the wall, we also share the gospel. If you've never surrendered your life to Christ, here's Dr. Larry Spargimino to tell you how.
Salvation is a free gift, but as is true with every gift, it must be received. Friend, have you received the gift of eternal life?
Thanks, Brother Larry. Coming up next on most of these stations is a Bible in the News report. Join us tomorrow when Brother Hutchings and David Benoit talk about Christmas for Children on your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. It's time for Southwest Radio Ministries' Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program. I'm Jerry Giltner. I'll be bringing you today's report. The Middle East peace process is a thorny one, and the longer it continues, the more nations of the world seek to influence it. Among the latest is a push by European Union representative Javier Solana. Apparently, it is not enough that the United States is pushing hard for some sort of agreement before President George W. Bush leaves office in January 2009. Solana, the EU's representative, was touring the Middle East recently. Among his reasons for being there is that he is seeking what has been called a vital role for the 27-member coalition in the peace process. We're quoting from prophecynews.co.uk. This story was posted in October 2008. Quote, Javier Solana, the High Representative for the European Common Foreign and Security Policy, has arrived in Damascus on the second leg of his five-day tour of the Middle East. His latest tour is expected to include visits to the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, where he is likely to discuss issues such as the Iranian nuclear crisis, the Middle East peace process, and broadening relations between the European Union and the Arab world. In regards to the Middle East peace process, Solana stated that the Europeans are seeking to play an instrumental role in the process. Quote, We have a long-standing position that aims at reaching a comprehensive peace process in the region. The Europeans would like to have a vital role in this process, said Solana, whose last visit to Damascus was in March 2007. His remarks follow similar statements by French President Nicolas Sarkozy during a recent visit to Jordan, in which both Sarkozy and Jordanian monarch Abdullah II agreed the centrality of the European Union in the Middle East process. It is also not the first time Solana has called for Europe to play a significant role in resolving the Middle East conflict. His comments come as Israeli President Shimon Peres embarks on a state visit to Egypt. Close quotes. When looking at the prophetic scriptures, we realize the importance of a peace agreement in the process of bringing in the final 7 years on earth as we know it. We are told that the Antichrist will confirm an agreement that will signal the beginning of Daniel's 70th week. We read, And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. That's from Daniel chapter 9, verse 27. Could the next peace agreement be the one the Antichrist will confirm? That's today's Bible in the News Report, a presentation of Southwest Radio Ministries. These reports, as well as questions and answers, are published each month in a booklet. To get a copy, call, write, or visit our website. Please include a gift of $4 in the U.S., $6 in Canada to cover shipping and handling. Call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008. Or visit the web at swrc.com. Join us for the next Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News or question and answer.